It's hard to imagine, isn't it, that was 15 years ago. 15 years ago, we woke up to news that radically changed the way in which we perceive life, the way in which we perceive the world we live in, the way in which we see our safety, and the way in which we see the protection that is around us, the way in which we experience what it means to be vulnerable. For me, for my generation, I'm 39 years old, for me, this event that took place on 9/11 15 years ago, this is my generation's JFK. This is my generation's D-Day. This is my generation. This is a thing that for many of us, it's a time for us to remember that when somebody just simply says the words 9/11, immediately we go back to it. You don't even have to context it with anybody. If somebody said, what do you think about when I say the numbers 9/11, immediately we'd go back to this time in which we experienced terror in a way that we'd never experienced it before. I've always tried to figure this out in different ways where I'll come up to somebody, I'll say, well, what would you think about if I said the numbers 3 and 8? But nobody says that it's your birthday, and so I'm gonna try that for a while. But for some reason, because whether it's good or bad, whether it's joyful or whether it's sad, when we experience something that is so impactful, we can never forget it. Just watching that clip, just hearing the news stories that you've heard today or in anticipation of today, a lot of us can remember exactly what was going on when we heard the news. I remember for me, I was on my way to work. I was an admissions counselor at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota. I was going to work early that day, and as I was going, the radio was interrupted, and they gave the information of what was taking place. So immediately, when I got to work, usually I would go right to the admissions office that was in the administration building, but I knew that wasn't the place to go. And this was before 24/7 news, where you could get everything and stream it on your computer. So I knew the place to go was to the student union. So I immediately went to the student union. It was incredibly early, a time during the day which college students just don't get up. But this day, I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder, wall to wall people. And everybody was glued to trying to wrap their minds around what's going on? What just happened? I was standing next to my boss. His name was Scott Ellingson, and Scott and I were talking, and I was battling an incredibly bad cold. I had been for some time, and so Scott looked at me and he said, Jeremy, you're not doing anybody any good here. We don't want to get what you have, and also I don't think anybody's going to get any work done today as well, so why don't you go home? So I went home and ended up being home for 2 days, and I remember just watching everything. Wanting to learn more about what was happening. My brother-in-law was in England at the time. He traveled for his work. And I remember talking to my sister, and she's trying to figure out, when's he going to get home? How is he going to get home? How is this whole thing going to work? But one of the things that, for me, when I think about 9/11, that's imprinted on my brain more than anything else, that will stay with me, was the stories that were depicted in that clip that you just saw. That not just the fire department and the police department of the New York City area, but the fact that people from all over our nation. I mean, people, I was living in Fargo at the time, and literally, the news reports were that police officers, firemen and women from the Fargo area were literally leaving, and they were sending people immediately to go to New York. I remember thinking to myself, I mean, we were here, and it was safe here. There was no danger here. But everybody seemed to be going there. I remember thinking to myself, what causes us to go from here to there? I started to think to myself, if I was in the same situation, would I go? I mean, I'd like to think that I would. I'd like to think that given the opportunity, that if I have spent my life in that line of duty, that I would do anything to go. But I remember thinking to myself, I don't know if I'd have what it takes. The call to serve, the call to give it possibly everything you have and to give it away. What motivates us to go from here to there? Well, when you recognize what the call's for, when you realize, when you understand, when you start to wrestle with the incredible value that's held in where you're going to, when you start to hear the stories, and when you start to hear the things that people, the lives that were saved by people just simply showing up, you start to see to yourself, well, of course, why wouldn't you go? What could ever get you to stay? But we have those moments all over our lives. We have those moments here as a church each and every single week. We've been going through this message series called Five Leaps of Faith, Radical Discipleship for Ordinary Christians. What does it mean and what does it take and how do we become a follower of Jesus Christ? What does it ask of us? Does being a follower of Jesus Christ, Jesus himself says, come and follow me. I will show you the way, I will show you the truth, I will show you the life. Just come and follow me, come to me. And the invitation is for us to live like Jesus and to act like Jesus and to love like Jesus. And that's what's so important about what we celebrate today. As you heard Andy talk about in the announcements, if you're here at that point, it's Rally Sunday. And Rally Sunday is an incredibly important day for us as a church, not because some magical trick is happening, not because we celebrate that Jesus died or Jesus was raised from the dead. No, it's nothing like that. But what it is for us and what we celebrate as a church is we celebrate the fact that the year is getting started again. And we remember in it the power of what happens when we come together. That when we come together, when each of us come together, we come together and we bring about something that's beautiful. No matter who we are, no matter what we've done, no matter where we've been, no matter what faults and flaws we may think that we bring to the table, that we're reminded that God can and God does use us. That who we are, it's of infinite value. Not just to God, but to the world around us. And that what we do together can have an incredible impact on the world around us. I've said it before, I'll say it again. One of the questions I ask myself all the time, that it kind of, for me, it kind of guards everything that we do here as a church, is I ask myself, if Lutheran Church of Hope was not here, if we ceased to exist, if tomorrow we woke up and this church didn't exist any longer, would anybody notice? Would it make a difference? What would the imprint that would be left, what would it look like? Because see, I think sometimes we get caught when we think about the church and we think about our relationship with God and our pursuit of trying to follow Jesus is we think it's all about us. And we think it's all we can do to satisfy what our desires and our needs and what suits us the best. So we come, and if somebody's sitting in our seat, we kind of get angry because, hey, you're sitting in my seat. Or if we come and the coffee's not hot enough, or if we realize that it's Lutheran coffee and it's terrible, we're upset by it. Or we start to rate the songs that were sung, or the message that was preached, or the programs that are offered. We create an idea that the church is something that I go to and something that it ultimately exists to serve me. church isn't what's done here. The church is what we do out there. It's kickoff weekend. We know that. High school football kicked off 2 weeks ago. College football kicked off actually a week ago, but for a lot of you, especially if you're Hawkeye fans, the college football season kicked off last night. For those of you who are Iowa State fans, you're still wondering if the season has even started yet. And you're wondering if you even want to go through it. And I got to say that I don't have a dog in that race. I'm a Minnesota Gopher fan, and we're terrible, so I don't even think about college football. But if you're a Vikings fan, you're really happy right now. But the thing I love about football is it's the ultimate, for me, it's not my favorite sport, but it's the ultimate team sport. And what we see when football teams come and they do what they do is we see that it's ultimately a thing where they have to come together. You have 11 players on the field for a team at a given time. 11 on offense, 11 on defense. And each person of those 11 have to do what they do in order that the offense would succeed or the defense would succeed. And the offense depends on what the defense is able to do, and the defense depends on what the offense is able to do. And both of them depend on what the kicking game is able to do, the special teams are able to do. What we realize is they can't do anything without the other person. That ultimately what they want to do is they want, and they have a common goal of where they want to go, but they need to agree on how they're going to get there and what motivates them. One of the things that was fun for me, being a bystander living in Iowa and not being an Iowa or an Iowa State fan, was what happened to the Hawkeyes last season. One of the things that fascinates me about the Hawkeye season last week is with all due respect, no offense, but if you were to look on paper and you were to go player by player and stack up Iowa against any of a lot of the other teams that they beat and they faced and that they were ended up being ranked ahead of, they weren't better than them. But what Iowa did, I would say, and you can argue with me if you want, but what Iowa did last year was they played better together than any other team in the nation. And what they were able to do was to produce something that was, if you're a football fan, was magical. And they realized that in order to get there, they needed each other. It's kind of like the church. It's kind of what we are talking about what we're celebrating. In a sense, if you're going to boil it down and you're going to oversimplify it, what the policeman and the fireman and the teammate, what motivates them is the love for the other. It's a love for the vision that's been cast before them. And this is exactly and precisely the way Jesus operated. In fact, this is the way that God has operated. There's something that's interesting to me is that if God wanted to do what God wanted to do it all by himself and not depend on anybody else, he could have done it. He's God. If Jesus could have come and just done it all by himself, he could have. He was God. But somehow, and for some reason, God chose to invite us into the game. It's the Bible story that was read for us this evening. It comes from Matthew chapter 28. We call this the Great Commission. It's the end of Matthew's gospel. It's Jesus has done his ministry. He's done all of his things on earth. Jesus has been arrested. He's been put on trial. He's been put to death. He defeats death. He's raised to a new life. He appears to a whole bunch of people. And the last thing that Jesus does is he tells the 11 disciples that were left. There was 12 of them to begin with. One of them, his name was Judas, and Judas betrayed Jesus. And it wasn't that Judas was thrown out as much as Judas didn't think that forgiveness would be available to him. So he left. So there's 11 disciples that are left, and Jesus tells them. He tells him in his last time that he's going to be able to spend with him, he tells him to go up on the side of a mountain and to meet him there. Now, a lot of biblical scholars will say that the place that Jesus met his disciples, it was in the area of Galilee, and it was on a place called Mount Arbel. This is a picture of Mount Arbel. My wife and I were able to be there last November. And this picture was taken on a very hazy day, so you can't really see, but Mount Arbel would be the highest point in the whole region. And when you are on the top of Mount Arbel, you can see what you would imagine would be the entire world. And Jesus takes his disciples to the top of this mountain to give them a picture of what he's calling them to, of reminding them. It was at the beginning of the Gospels that Jesus had called them and said, you are going to be my disciples. You can follow me. I believe that you have what it takes. And Jesus spends 3 years and pours his life into them. That gives them a model of how to live and gives them a model on who's on the inside of the boundaries and who's on the outside of the boundaries. That Jesus' kingdom is an inclusive kingdom that's offering love and grace and forgiveness that's completely countercultural. That's motivated by love. And Jesus, in his last act with his disciples, he wants them to remember what he's done and why he came and what it's going to take for them to get from where they are to where he's calling them to go. And Jesus says to him in Matthew chapter 28, we refer to it as the Great Commission. It's what the mission statement of Lutheran Church of Hope is based on. Our mission statement as a church, it's important that we know this so we remember what guides us and what directs us. To reach out to the world around us and share the everlasting love of Jesus Christ based on what Jesus says to his disciples before he ascends for the final time into heaven. And Jesus looks at his disciples and he says, I have been given all the authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go. I have been given all of the authority. I've been given all of the power. I am the God who is in flesh, which to the disciples, those people who had spent 3 years with him, there was no questioning that. Jesus wasn't saying something that they didn't know. Jesus was confirming what they had experienced for 3 years. Jesus says, you've seen what I've done. You've seen who I am. You've seen what's guided me. You've seen the power that's been given to me. You've heard me say that you'll go on to do greater things than I have done. And because of all that, because you are who you are and you've seen what you've seen, you've been able to witness the miracles that you're able to perform when you use my name. Because of the power that I have that's been given to you, you need to go. You can't stay here. You can't stay here, not because here is a bad place. Here is a wonderful place. But there's a world that needs you. There's a world that's dying, literally dying to hear the message of the gospel. Therefore, go. That word go in Matthew's gospel is used over 20 times. 20 times. Seems as if Matthew's trying to get a point across to those who would read his account of Jesus' life, that faith, that following Jesus, from Matthew's perspective, from Jesus' perspective, from the Bible's perspective, isn't something that we do in our armchair. It's something that catapults us, that this story of the love of Jesus Christ, the story of the love of a God who would love the world so much that he would enter into, to take the form of a human being and enter into it, become a slave and to die on a cross so that we may be free, would be the truth that would send us in motion, that would motivate us to love the world around us. You need to go. Not because here's bad. Because the people there, they need you. They need to experience love. If you've experienced love like that before in your life, you never will forget it. Last week, if you were at worship, I talked about the fact that my wife and our kids, they were up in Roseau, my wife's hometown, 600 miles north of here. They were there because my wife's grandmother had passed away. So they had left on Friday. The funeral was going to be on Tuesday. Monday happened to be my son's sixth birthday. So Monday night, I was going to FaceTime. I stayed here. I was going to FaceTime my wife and my kids. I wanted to see how the rest of my son's birthday was. And I called my wife and we're talking. And she said, Trey has a horrible stomach ache. And because my wife and I are wonderful, incredible parents, we said to each other, well, that just shows that he ate too much sugar. It's his own fault. I mean, he had birthday cake, and then he had a birthday cupcake, and then he had bars at the visitation. So this just is, he made his bed, now he has to lie in it. It serves him right. And then she said, oh, I gotta go. I think he's gonna get sick. So in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I bet he's not gonna eat sugar like that again. And then shortly after that, she, like 3 minutes later, she sends me a picture of him, and he didn't end up getting sick. He fell asleep. Which for some of you, you have the gift of having kids that just tip over when they're tired. And I'm envious of you because that's not my kids. Some people will post pictures on Facebook and they'll say, oh, little Johnny just got so tired he fell asleep. And I'm like, when my kids get tired, they go faster. I don't understand it. They don't make sense to me. So the fact that my wife sent me a picture of my son just falling asleep was just crazy to me. I'm like, wow, he must not feel good at all. And then I got a call from my wife on Tuesday morning. Said he slept maybe 2 hours last night. And then we're going, oh, I think he might be sick. Her mom is an RN, she's a nurse. And so she had said to Bridget, to my wife, she had said, I think it might be his appendix. And it's like, no way, he's 6 years old, it's not his appendix. What was his appendix? And so that morning, I talked to my son. He's in the hospital, and my wife, both my son and my wife, they said, we need you here. Thinking to myself, how do I get there? Because when I knew that my wife was alone and worried and my son needed his father, there was nothing that I wouldn't do to get there. So I hopped in a car, and right as I was getting ready to leave Des Moines, my dad grabs a hold of me. My dad's office is right next door to me, so we're able to run into each other multiple times through the day. My dad told me, he says, Jeremy, I don't want you to drive alone. I'm going with you. I don't want you guys to have two cars up there. I'm going to drive with you. I'll get up there. I'll just come right back. I'm reminded that a parent never quits being a parent. And a lot of you parents know that. And a lot of you kids that are getting to be teenagers need to be reminded of that. Just because you get to be a certain age doesn't mean that your parents are going to start loving you any less and start wanting to have less of a role in your life. So we got there, and my son, who is deathly afraid of doctors, 3 years ago, he was sick, and they had to do a couple different blood tests. And so from that point on, anytime we talked about a doctor, he would start to panic, and he would literally start to sweat. We talked about taking my daughter to the doctor, and my son would start to sweat. I mean, he had white coat syndrome like nobody I've ever seen before. So I get there Tuesday night. He'd had surgery at noon that day. Everything turned out. It went beautifully. And I was amazed by this kid. So I get up, wake up on Wednesday, go back to the hospital. And I say to my son, I said, hey, buddy, I was really worried about you. You scared us. He said, Daddy, I'll always be okay. I said, why? So he said, well, I know that God was with me. And Dr. Vandewig. And I thought, which one rates higher in your life right now? Then Dr. Vandewig came into the room, and Trey had a couple steri strips where his incision was that had wrinkled, and so they were going to need to remove those. And my son, he has this real, he's trying to determine what's going on in his life right now. Like after he got his surgery, he was going to take a drink of water, and he said, "Is it all going to fall out now?" Like he thought literally anything that went in his mouth was going to come out of his stomach, which I kind of wanted to say, "Yep, it's going to," but you know, can only play with your kids so much. And so he thought that if they took the steri strip off his, like, all of his guts were going to fall out. I mean, he literally thought this. And so Dr. Vandeweghe comes in, and Dr. Vandeweghe sits right in front of Trey. And Dr. Vandeweghe sits down, and he tells him, "Hey, buddy, here's where you are right now. And it's not that this place is bad, but this place is better." And Dr. Vandeweghe's literal words, exact words were, "And buddy, I love you too much to let you stay where you are right now." Dr. Vandeweghe had lost a son when his son was 5 years old and was motivated by love to love the kids in his community. You know, one of the things that I love about this place, one of the things I love about this church, I think I could list time and time again how many things I love about this church and all of the reasons why I love this church and how blessed I feel to be a part of what God's doing. I don't think we're better than any other church, but I wouldn't want to be a part of any other team. And you amaze me. And I want to try something, and I'm going to take a little bit of a risk, and some of you might rebel against it, and if that's your choice, then God forgives, but I don't. And so we'll just put that out there right now. But here's my question. And I want to prove a point of why I love this church so much. If you are here, and you have come to this place because somebody invited you, would you please stand up? Because somebody said to you, "I think you should come and check this out." Don't be bashful. If you have come to faith because somebody who loved you, not just to this church, if you have come to faith because somebody at some point in your life told you that it would be a good thing for you, please stand up. See, this is what it means to be the church. This is what it means to be a follower. This is the radical leap of faith for ordinary Christians. You can be seated. That 90% of us are here because we're standing on the shoulders of somebody who came before us. That somebody was so motivated by love that they couldn't help but share the best news that the world has ever heard with us. That somebody saw us wherever we were and whatever was going on in our life. Maybe things weren't even going poorly for us. But they looked at us and they saw us and they said, "I love you so much that I want to introduce you to this person by the name of Jesus who will alter your life forever. That will give you the security and the assurance that the world that you live in doesn't get the chance to have the final answer for you. That no matter how bad things can go, that God will be with you." And you might be lucky enough to have Dr. Vandeweghe too. I don't know. And that's what makes Rally Sunday so holy. Because it's a time where we kick off all of these ministries for the school year. And don't make any mistake about it. Don't mishear that. We don't do ministries because we think ministries are the things that save people's lives. We do ministries because they point to the person of Jesus Christ, who is the only one that can save lives. I mean, today we kicked off Hope Kids, and if you have a child that's age 3 to grade 5 and they're not in Hope Kids, get them registered for Hope Kids. It's never too late to sign up or just show up. We'll get them to the right place. We'll take good care of them. We'll share with them the story of Jesus Christ. If you have a junior higher, ages grade 6 through grade 8, bring them to Power Life. It starts this Wednesday night. You don't need to register, just show up. If you register, it just means the wait will be shorter for you. And it leads to less chaos. So you can register or you can just show up. Ignition. We change Ignition here at West Des Moines from Sunday nights. Now it's on Wednesday nights, which is going to line up with our Page 2 service that's now going to be on Wednesday nights as well. Page 2 will start at 6 o'clock. All of our youth programs are done by the time that Page 2 is getting done. We have Alpha that starts literally right after worship this evening. If you have questions, if you have questions about faith, if you've always wanted to know who is Jesus, why does it matter, why did Jesus die, how can I have faith, how can I read the Bible, how do I share my faith, how do I pray, what in the world is the Holy Spirit and what does the Holy Spirit do, come to Alpha. It's one of the best things that we have going on around Hope because it gets the Jesus thing going. Literally, show up, just go across the hall. We'll even give you a free meal if you come. And if you come tonight and you don't like it and it's not the right time, we won't pound on your door to get you to come back. But I've never talked to somebody who's gone through Alpha that says at the end of it, I wish I wouldn't have done it. Not once. I've been teaching Alpha here for 5 years. Not one time has somebody said to me, I really wish I wouldn't have done Alpha. It's an incredible gift to be able to get the understandings of the basics of faith. If you have those questions that you fear, that if you ask them, everyone would wonder if you're like, you even know who God is, that Alpha is a great place for that. But even if you know and you have a strong relationship with Jesus, Alpha is still a great place to get connected to other people. It doesn't have to be just for beginner Christians. My wife and I took it when I was here on internship. I thought they made me take it because they didn't think I was going to pass seminary. But they wanted me to take it so I'd understand this church. Alpha is a great thing. We have something, we have our missions opportunities that are going on throughout the year, both locally and globally. Go to the website, check it out. We have men's ministry, we have women's ministry. We have ministry for married couples. We have ministry. We have ministries that are for any segment. We have a young adult ministry that's for people in their 20s and 30s that meets on Thursday night right down the hall. We have a recovery ministry that helps with people with hurts, habits, and hangups. Ever had one of those in your life? But none of these ministries are there for the sake of the ministries or the programs. They're there to point us to the only one who has the answers. The only one that can get us from where we are to where we need to go. Who gives us love. And who calls us to be a part of it. Who tells us to get off our seat and to get moving. That who you are and what you do will literally save a person's life for eternity. Will allow them to overcome their hurt, will allow them to get past an incredible tragedy, crisis in their life, that will give them hope in the midst of despair. Just by being who you are in response of who God created you to be. But Jesus says nobody would take a light and hide it under a bushel. Nobody would be given a light that would illuminate a room and would cover it up. That would be foolish. And Jesus says, you are the light. So let your light shine. Let your light shine in a way that when everybody see you, they won't talk about how great you are. They'll be able to see that there's a God who's created you and who's created you in such a way that there is a love and a joy and a peace and a patience and a gentleness and a kindness and a self-control that comes out of you, which is a fruit of the Spirit that God has given to you through faith. Who wants you to get plugged in, not for the sake of this church, but for the sake of you and for the sake of the world around you. Just as a little bit of fun, as we get ready to kick off this year, we got a quick starting lineup video to allow you to get to know who we are as a church. Maybe you're here for the first time and you're wondering, how do I know who to even talk to and what are the faces and what are the names of the people I need to go to? So here's our starting lineup at Lutheran Church of Hope. Take a look.
It's time for your Lutheran Church of Hope starting lineups.
Hi, I'm Emily Langpaul, and we are the Youth and Family Ministry Team, formerly known as Children's and Student Ministry Team.
I'm Corey Dahlquist.
I'm Ashley Birch.
I'm Justin Stofa.
I'm Emmy Boland.
I'm Nick Brannon.
I'm Kristen Lance.
I'm Molly Halperdy.
I'm Stephanie Mason.
I'm Lindsay Cordy.
Hi, I'm Gail Smith, and this is the Hospitality Food Service Team.
My name is Jake Ehlers.
My name is Richie Leckert.
Hi, I'm Pastor Richard, and this is the Hope Adult Discipleship Team.
I'm Eric Pate.
I'm Ben Mason.
I'm Larry Lang.
I'm Al Lorenzen.
Susie Lowe.
Susan Anderson.
Andy Hermanson.
Hi, I'm Jamie Richards.
Hi, I'm Melissa Matthews.
Hi, I'm Mary Steer.
I'm Debbie Pamphlet.
Hi, I'm Colette Nelson, and this is the Care Team at West Des Moines.
Hi, I'm Leela Griffin.
I'm Alyssa Dale.
I'm Vince Bell.
I'm Pam Abel.
I'm Darcy Hell.
Hi, I'm Cindy Buck.
I'm Jen Dar.
And we're the Creative Arts Team.
I'm Carly Heiduke, and this is the Communications Team.
Mandy Miller.
Kelsey Williams.
Jennifer Eckerman.
Shandy Michelson.
Linda Rubel.
Laura McCall.
Chris New.
Hi, I'm Becky Stewart. Catherine Hahn and I make up the prayer team.
Hi, I'm Renee Fuller. We are the Admin Office Team.
I'm Lindsay Thrain.
I'm Leah Huff.
I'm Shannon Floor.
I'm Medina Berman.
I'm Mary Deer.
I'm Mark Hofschneider, and this is Lutheran Church of Hope Mission Team.
Jennifer Berger.
Matt McNeese.
Chris Reed.
Luis Arredondo.
Hi, I'm Cindy Manning.
Hi, I'm Michelle Vaughn.
Hi, I'm Rachel Fridell.
And we're the Cafe Hope Team.
Hey there, I'm Perry Ross, and we are the West Des Moines Worship Staff.
I'm Levi Hansen.
I'm Matt Bayard.
I'm Melissa Conley.
And I'm Kim Hensley.
Hi, I'm Adam Burton.
I'm Jared Brees.
And I'm Peter Eschenbrenner. We're the Information Technology Team.
I'm Kathy Benedict, and we are part of the facilities team at Hope West Des Moines.
I'm Dan Winterwald.
I'm Lester Cahale.
And I'm Travis Johnson.
I'm Jeremy Tiller.
My name is Eric Stewart.
Hi, I'm Josh Kaiser, and we are the West Des Moines production team.
And I'm Eric Proust.
I'm Pete McNaughton.
I'm Mary Meyer.
I'm Kate Sisler.
I'm Eric Brown.
And I'm Jim Shepard.
I'm Jen Thielen.
And I'm Carol Jensen. We are the behind-the-scenes faces of the finance team.
Those are your starters for Lutheran Church of Hope in 2016-2017.
Some of the greatest people that I know, some of the greatest friends that I have are people who I get to be a part of this team with. But if you're going to ask me who's the most important part of that team, I'll give you two answers. Who's the most important person of that team? My two answers would be you and Jesus. Because you know somebody that I don't know, and nobody else on that team knows. And the only way that the message of the gospel is going to get to that person is through you. Because God has given you the ability to be in a relationship with that person. And in that relation, you can let his name be known. That God has called you and formed you and created you and sent you into a relationship with a world that's dying to hear a message. How much bad news do we hear day in and day out? And the one great news that has never changed and will never change is the message that we have to share, to proclaim, to let it be known that we have a God who saves and we're better together. We need each other. That we don't come to worship just for our soul endeavor and our soul relationship between ourselves and God. We come because the people around us need us. And the people out there need us. You're the light of the world, Jesus says. So let your light shine. Let your light shine, Hope. Continue to be the church that you have been for the last 22 years. When you think about it, it's incredible to think, where's God going to take us? I mean, it was incredible, this ride that we get to be a part of here in this place, to celebrate this God who has given us this life, and to shout it from the rooftops. So as we